Hello, I'm Peter Jun-Hosang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form. It's no secret that fashion is one of the world's most polluting industries. From raw fibres and across the value chain to the product's life cycle end, fashion impacts everything that it touches. Although a serious global issue with many challenges, there's also many opportunities to be had, such as circular fashion. In this episode, I'll be joined by Connor Hill, a circular fashion expert that has worked with brands like Adidas and John Lewis to help put them on the circular path. Rental, repair and resale services are now the norm, and secondhand clothing is a mainstay for consumer options. But navigating and integrating circular strategies can be bewildering for many fashion brands, especially if they are only at the beginning of their journey. This makes it even harder for circular innovation to get their foot in the door.
For other brands that have done almost nothing, it's about showing them straight up on paper, like, this is where your competitors are. This is their growth in these areas. You're getting left behind and you're becoming less and less relevant to an increasingly growing part of the society that cares about these things. And if you lose your relevance, you're really going to start to lose your market share as well.
Connor, Von and I will be taking a deep dive into circular fashion, which we hope you'll be inspired by and go circular in some way. Perfect, shall we do this then, guys?
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being with myself and Von today. Connor, super excited for this podcast episode, talking about sustainability and fashion innovation. But to get started, would you like to tell our audience who you are?
Perfect. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me and really looking forward to doing this podcast with you. So my name's Connor Hill. I've been working in the circular economy and sustainability space for around 12 years now. Started off with various big brands like Marks and Spencer's, Adidas and John Lewis. And then over the last 2 years, I've been working independently. I've set up Inspire Circular, and what we do there is we help big brands, small brands to really start to navigate that circular journey, where they should start, and then we help them to accelerate in this space. We also teach through people like the University Arts London, Cambridge University, and for us, it's really important to inspire the next generation of change makers, as well as existing leaders, how they can shape the future with a real sustainability focus and circularity focus as well. And then later this year, we'll also be launching a very small brand, which is very, very focused around circularity, and that we want that to be a blueprint for there's so much that's possible already in this space. And it's not about growth, it's about proving it's possible already today. Brands don't need to wait 5 years. So we'll tell you more about that later this year as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for the introduction. So is it safe to say that you are a circular fashion guru then?
I like to think of myself as like an entrepreneur within this space. I get very, very excited about lots of things that are happening right now and the things that are coming up around the corner as well, which I know yourselves are very tapped into that as well with all the startups you work with. So yeah, it's a big passionate of mine, passionate space.
Yeah. So before we get started into the conversation, we've got a few facts and figures that Ron's just going to take us through about sustainability and what's been happening in the industry.
Yeah, so maybe you might be listening and you haven't been up to date with what's going on. There are a few things happening with fashion and sustainability and circularity. Specifically in investments, we've got the LVMH Luxury Ventures, who's actually taken an undisclosed stake in a Israeli lab-grown diamond startup called, I believe you call it Luzix? And that's part of a $90 million funding round. And then there's also, in general, obviously things like this, putting more pressure on fast fashion conglomerates such as Inditex, who have now actually been pushed to invest in sustainability-focused startups, and including that of Circ, which is a textile-to-textile recycling company. And for them, they actually, Inditex specifically, have actually joined that $30 million funding round for that. And then in other news, or kind of like more general accountability activities, we've got many retail platforms, or resale platforms, sorry, RealReal, Rent the Runway, etc. They are among kind of like 11 founding members of the American Circular Textiles Policy Group, which was announced actually not too long ago. So all of this is kind of within the last month. And actually, that is kind of reshaping the policies of how people, or brands can support textile recycling and recovering recovery in the US. And a bit more on the kind of a fun side of things, it's virtue signaling by brands such as Louis Vuitton, Prada, Valentino, who have actually changed their logos to be, modify them to resemble the recycling symbol. So that was actually also in, to accompany some of the collections that they've done that do include some sustainable pieces. And then last but not least, we've also got the CMA's Green Claims Code, which actually includes basically activities such as including QR codes for more finer details of what makes these products more sustainable, rather than just kind of the marketing spiel that, you know, all these brands do. So that's kind of what's happening with that. And that includes obviously different brands with that specific code, including like Boohoo, ASOS, H&M and things like that. So that's what's happening. And I think that's quite interesting. It's a bit of a mix between circularity and sustainability in general. Yeah.
Yeah, I love how all of that information, there's a lot happening there, but I love how actually it's touching every market level mm-hmm. of the fashion industry, from Inditex, you know, fast fashion, right through to your luxury brands there, which I think is quite exciting. So I guess, Connor, what do you think all of this means?
Well, it's super exciting space, super exciting time. We've moved from a space where brands have their own innovation teams, their own in-house R&D, and now they're realizing that, you know, the speed we have to move at is just, we need to move super, super fast. So there's lots of incubators like yourselves, lots of VCs specialized in this area. And that's really helping brands to look out with themselves and find these amazing startups around the world that, exactly as you say, can help them from every bit of the, whether it be the new materials, which are regenerative, they're using materials that already exist, or it's right at the very end of when that product cannot be used any longer and how you can revalue that material again and again. So we need innovation across the board and we need it super fast. So the fact that we're getting all these brands from the high end to the fast fashion needing and already investing in solutions is really, really exciting. And it just gives, you know, that young startup more and more appetite to be like, okay, if we've got something here, we truly believe in it, we test it, get that MVP done, then the big brands are ready to invest in these solutions and help us grow alongside. So that makes me really, really passionate around this area. When I started in sustainability, it was a really, really hard sell. And it's changing rapidly now. A lot of clients are passionate about this. Maybe some senior executives that in the past, it was difficult to convince them. Their kids are now pestering them. So they're getting it from all angles now. And I do feel the industry is moving. I do still feel it's not nearly quick enough. But just that slight, you know, those 10 headlines there or so, all really exciting. And there's definitely more to come even this year.
Yeah, most definitely. And I guess, obviously, with all that excitement and all this movement of things happening, what do you think might be the challenges of these brands adopting these circular practices?
Sure. Well, if we even just look at the way that most brands and companies are set up just now, their main targets are growth. So sustainability and circularity really do not align with that very easily, because you have to have, you know, shareholders are looking for their dividend. If you've, you know, taken a huge, done a lot of investment rounds, those investments or investors are looking for their return as well. So that model of we need to produce more to sell more at either a large margin if it's a high end or a small margin if it's a lower end product, those things are really disruptive or challenging and speed bumps to a more circular model where we need to massively slow down the amount we're producing. We need to keep what we have in circulation for much longer, so stop over consuming. So that just foundational part of how that business is governed and the metrics around that are already a big, big challenge. So when we look at some of these brands, they do a capsule collection. It maybe gets a lot of really good PR. But until that capsule collection is a significant percentage, or those recycled materials are a significant percentage of their overall portfolio of products or product range, then we're just making these incremental changes and it's not going to be fast enough. So I think that's the bit that we need to really start to shift. And that's where a lot of the challenger brands are getting into this space. You know, they've been born from a Kickstarter with values around degrowth, values around we need to be regenerative, restorative, we need to be fair for everyone, not just at the very start of the supply chain, but at the very, very end when the products end up in the global south. How can we be fair for everyone? How can we have equity? How can we include everyone? And how can we have overall fairness? That's really exciting for me. There's a couple brands just starting to get into this space. And I think that will be, you know, they'll continue to disrupt the market. But for me, they're still very, very tiny. And until we can really shift the Zaras, the Boohoos, all of these people away from this growth model, then it will be difficult for them to get anywhere close to being truly sustainable.
What are their names, Connor? The brands you're talking about?
So a couple of them we're working with. So they've not launched yet. So I'll share those with you in the notes or whatever else. Obviously, some of the leaders out there have maybe started in this space, but I'm not going to name them because I feel they're now going into a growth model, which is unfortunate. And whether that's due to, you know, the investors, they're pushing them to go for growth now. So I don't want to name names there, but for the ones that I think are being really disruptive, when they do launch, I'll let you know. And I'm sure they'll be keen to match up with some of your startups.
Okay, so you have, obviously, you mentioned right in your introduction, you've worked with brands like Adidas and John Lewis. Like, how did you get them to adopt circular practices? Like, what were your major roadblocks there when working with them?
Sure. So with both of those, that was when I was working in-house rather than independently as a consultant. And so I joined Adidas back in like 2015. And at that stage, there wasn't much happening from a brand and fashion point of view around sustainability that was consumer facing. There was a lot happening in the supply chain, and that was, you know, really the priority. But from like 2015 onwards, you started to see brands talking more around recycled polyester. But there needed to be a story around it because people were like, why would I wear recycled packaging? You know, it probably doesn't perform as well, doesn't feel as well, feels dirty. So they had to do a lot of work there around getting people to care about recycled materials. And a lot of what Adidas was doing at the time was around the part of the ocean for part of the ocean plastic, which is taking plastic that's been intercepted from or ocean bound plastic. So this is one like small area. But you have to remember that these are huge, big companies and they work on very tight calendars. So, you know, you have your strategy. It's all going to be focused around this specific thing. It's going to have certain specific colors. And then over around a 2 year to 18 month period, it goes from that very conceptual into the shop floor. Now, if you're wanting to build in something that's sustainable, circular, that totally new, then that means that material probably isn't ready 2 years out or 18 months out. It needs to go into a development cycle that's going to be a lot longer, needs to go through new quality testing, maybe needs a whole new dye process. So you need to think about how do you find the right partner that's willing to invest in this. So this whole challenge in the past anyway was anything you wanted to do around circularity and sustainability didn't fit the mold of these big, big machines. So you're always trying to sort of put this circular piece of jigsaw into, you know, a piece of jigsaw that just doesn't really work. So that was a huge challenge, that change management, internal buy-in. So we did a lot of pilots, whether it be taking out all the new Adidas products from the store in Berlin and only putting in vintage Adidas. And that meant that anyone going to the store that weekend was forced to look at these amazing heritage pieces, which were, you know, almost truly original in that moment because nobody else in Berlin could buy that same piece. And we also took someone from the archive to say that here, this is from the Barcelona Olympics. It was designed by these people. You know, the colors at this time were picked for the Barcelona Olympics because of these things. And suddenly you got people getting that value of clothes again, because it wasn't, you know, the same t-shirt that everyone's wearing to the same party that same weekend. They had a truly unique piece that was original from that time. So you had to do a lot of experimentation like this, and that goes across every part of circularity and sustainability, and really learn what was the consumer getting from it. Were they excited about it? Were they bought in? Were they educated? Did it turn into a change of behavior, or was it just a moment of inspiration? So I would say that was the big challenge at the start, lots of experimentation and trying to change this big model, which was built around efficiency, lots of different sign-offs, and then trying to build in this new thing that hadn't been done before. So over time, I mean, if you look at either of those companies now, if you look at John Lewis, just look at them up on Google, Circularity. They're doing a lot at the moment. They've just completed a Dragon's Den type exercise saying, here's a £1 million fund for startups that can help them on that circular journey. Because again, they realize that they don't have all the answers internally, but there's amazing startups up there with incredible ideas, and they can help them on that journey to build up, to get ready to work with a retailer like themselves. So I think it's not always going to be this traditional internal R&D. It's bringing in these startups already have that MVP ready, and they just need that big brand to help them scale. So big brands, it's a lot more difficult to get them to change quickly. And that's why it's also exciting working with brands like Noble and many others who are younger, more agile. They're growing, so they're actually changing their systems all the time. So it's easier to build in these new ideas, materials, processes much more quicker and bring them to market.
So from what you're saying there, it just takes a lot longer to implement.
Yeah.
If I'm a startup, what should I be expecting then in terms of just getting people to say a yes to me, to do a pilot with me?
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends what that startup's really looking for. So let's just say they've created a brand new material. Maybe it's a lab grown material that they've managed to sort of DIY in a small lab off the back of their PhD at uni, something like that. So something like that, you're going to be like, okay, which brands are really looking at these new generation of materials that are coming out of wet labs? Okay, wet lab innovation around materials is really, really niche just now. And there's probably only a handful of brands that are ready to really invest and see what the potential there looks like. Because a lot of brands don't have a huge, huge innovation budget. So probably I'd be saying, look at some of the big ones. The sportswear brands are the ones that generally have more innovation budget or the high-end luxury. I'd be looking, just going old school, going on LinkedIn, trying to work out who those key individuals are and start trying to set up meetings, send them some material samples, and then from there, see where the conversation goes. That would be, let's say, the more the hustler sort of way to do it, but equally working with yourselves or some of your other accelerators out there that already have that connection to these big brands. They're already coming to you to sort of see that portfolio of what's coming around the corner. I would actually say if they're really young, you know, to be a startup, to run a business, I've learned a lot over the last 2 years, is I might have some skills, but there's a lot of skills I don't have around marketing these other things. So when they go onto an accelerator like yours or others, they get that overall portfolio of, okay, this is how I need to build my business, not just one material that might work or might not work. So that would probably be my advice of, you can go the bootstrap way of reaching out. But equally, if they're really serious and they want to become, you know, a business that's going to grow and scale, then look at accelerators like yours to get that access to these brands, but also that overall mentoring in the areas they may not have the specialties right now.
I think we can all agree that sometimes it is quite difficult getting in touch with some of these brands as a startup, especially to do any piloting or some of the things that you've mentioned there. But obviously, talking about the brands that are actually doing something, who do you think are the potential winners at the moment that are showing that genuine sustainability or circularity and maybe are working with startups, for example, besides John Sure. Lewis, which you've mentioned?
Yeah. So I'd say like Pangaea is probably the one that it's almost like the well-known name within the industry anyway, beyond people who are already bought into sustainability, maybe don't quite know about Pangaea yet. They're still quite small, but if you're in sustainability, you see them everywhere. And what I really love about them is their honesty, their transparency around here. They're trying this new natural dye here. It's not maybe not being used so much commercially at a certain scale. So they're going to give it a go. They're pretty open around if it works or if it doesn't work. They're pretty open around why they're trying this rather than conventional synthetic dyes. And they're also pretty open around why they think conventional cotton maybe isn't the ultimate solution and why they're experimenting with others. So I think what you see some brands do is they might try a certain material and they almost don't make any story about it. Or if they do, the brand is so big that it doesn't get any visibility. So one of the brands that I work with at the moment is they're doing fantastic stuff, but all their social media channels are so full with their existing, you know, menswear, womenswear, whatever campaigns have got on, that it's hard to get that visibility because their brand is so big. Whereas Pangaea, they make the headline story, the sustainable innovation, the what's changed. And again, they're very open that the whole product isn't sustainable, but they've changed this one thing. And if it works, then they're going to make that a standardization across that collection maybe. And next year, they're going to try something else. So again, for me, they use a language as well that isn't, it doesn't make it exclusive. It makes it accessible. They, you know, if people know them, you buy a jumper and it tells you the story of how it was made. So again, they've made that, can I even say it's cool now to be sustainable, and they've made it like cool. Like if you said it in a different way and a different brand and just put it on a hang tag, people probably wouldn't remember that, or their mates wouldn't read it and they would go, yeah. So I think they're definitely a leader, and I know that's an easy one to say. And then the other one for me would be Ask It. Like for me, again, like they've just been working on this for so many years now. I know the founders pretty well. And again, like it's just part of their values. Like you talk to them and they're passionate about it. And, you know, they also get frustrated that they're not able to do certain things because of their size. But they're also very positive around that. And they're like, okay, we're going to tell everyone the factories we're using, because we know that they can, that factory can grow more. And if we tell our competitors that's where we are, hopefully more people use that factory. We can grow with them. They can afford to put the solar panels on the roof or whatever else it might be. So I think that's the other angle that I really like. And then there's many other smaller brands. So here in London, Christopher Raeburn is, you know, a huge, huge fan of what they're doing. And the angle that I love about them particularly is they do so many workshops where you can go and you can go and make a bag out of their cut scraps from their workshop. You get to meet the workers there who are making these, you know, bespoke pieces as well as inline pieces. And then you're playing with their scraps to try and make a bag, and they're teaching you. And it's not just the bag you make, but I massively value the pattern cutting, all the time that goes into that. I'm like, every piece I wear now, I'm like, wow, this takes a huge amount of time to do one part of making that product that I didn't really value as much as I do now. Obviously, I knew it was a process, but now I'm like, oh, it's so fiddly, these little bits to make that come together and make everything align. It takes a lot of time and effort and skill. So I really like that element of what Raeburn's doing as well.
Yeah, I love what Christopher Raeburn is doing. But as you said, that it takes a long time to do his type of product. So do you think it's ever going to be scalable to the size that it needs to be to make a real impact?
Sure. So I think scalability is going to be a challenge for a lot of things. But what he does and many others is this is a piece that you'll pass on to the next generation. So yes, you might invest in that one piece, but the idea is you will keep it for your entire life and pass it on to the next person because you've bought it as an investment piece that you really, really love. The other angle of that is there's so many people like Loanhood, which is very much a peer-to-peer rental market, whereby, like many others, but it's very much more at the target at millennials, Gen Z, whereby I might actively buy the Christopher Raeburn piece and some other, let's say, more staple pieces, and I'm renting that out to people who are in the same geography as me, same style as me. So if I am buying that more expensive piece, I'm buying it knowing that I might be renting it out for half the year to other people. And that, again, because it's been made with the quality, I know it's going to last those multiple rental stories or multiple rentals with other people in my community that share a similar style. And I can also borrow something off them as well. So is that side of things scalable? It depends what your definition of scalable is. For me, scalable is cost per wear. So and that's an angle that we need to look at it instead of like, let's not make loads and loads of sustainable things. Let's get the cost per wear as low as possible for those pieces so people really, really look after them, rather than lots and lots of sustainable pieces that have been scaled up, but again, nobody's really wearing them. So cost per wear is a really, really interesting space for me, and where the circularity helps you to do that, whether it be your e-commerce rental, there's lots of areas there as well to keep those pieces in use for a lot longer than traditionally.
Yeah, and yeah, obviously we've seen definitely a rise in resale platforms recently as well, and yeah, I think that's kind of the future of that, and actually kind of like the vintage thrifting that people are kind of liking. Well, I guess in your experience, what do you think usually would be the end goal for brands to be to onboard circular or sustainable departments, because I know you mentioned it earlier about how brands are actually starting to invest in their own departments, as well as obviously investing in actually onboarding startups who can implement it. But what do you think is usually the end goal for this, and how could the appropriate startups feed into that?
So there's a couple of different angles that I take, with depending on who the client is, who the brand is, depending on where they are with their overall sustainability journey anyway. Most of them are very, very new to circular economy. So that's a bit of a square one for almost all of them anyway. For the sustainability side, again, it depends. If they're right out front, you're helping them to really hone in on those areas. So if it's a product like, again, let's just stay with Christopher Rayburn. If it's a product that's really durable, that can last a long time, help them to tell the Rayburn story, but through the lens of durability. So like, champion that area. You don't need to champion every area of sustainability. It gets really confusing for the consumer. So you're helping them to champion that area. And, you know, you can look at straight up metrics around that, around consumer engagement, brand advocacy. If you're doing, I'm pretty sure they have a lifetime warranty on all their products. So you can always get that lifetime repairs to your product. So that's a really good story around sustainability and circularity. But they don't call it that. They just talk it about as a good quality product. So I think from that area, it's showing them some metrics around how consumer perception changes and lifetime value changes. For other brands that have done almost nothing, it's about showing them straight up on paper, like, this is where your competitors are. This is their growth in these areas. You're getting left behind and you're becoming less and less relevant to an increasingly growing part of society that cares about these things. And if you lose your relevance, you're really going to start to lose your market share as well. So you can show things like that, bringing in consumer insight sessions, focus groups, and just getting sometimes the executive team to actually hear from consumers directly of where they think they are, whether they know they're talking about their brand or not. And just hearing them talk about their competitor versus them, they're like, they get this real eye-opening thing, because unfortunately some executives are still very much in the ivory tower and they're not speaking with their consumers regularly enough. So when you hear that, that's when I quite often will see that big change in their mindset of like, wow, these consumers really, really care about them. And it's only going to get more and more care as we go forward. Whereas the longest river in Italy is now dried up. You know, I just walked in the park the other day and some of the biggest trees look like it's autumn. They're brown because it just hasn't rained in London for weeks and weeks now. So the more we can get these things front and center, if it's not something happening on the other side of the planet to these executives, the quicker they're going to be like, wow, consumers changing, the planet's changing around us. We need to do something if we want to be relevant in the future, or even if we want to leave a planet in a better condition. So there's lots of different ways there. But what I always like to do when we set up a strategy is create a program in the short term, which can inspire people internally, get them really excited about the brand. And it can be consumer facing, so it can be a pilot or a pop-up, but also have one significant operational piece as well, so that the accounting side and the finance side can also see the monetary savings there. So you've got one that's exciting people, inspiring people internally and externally, and one that really builds the business case overall and actually starts to move them in the direction of more sustainability, more circularity. But it's a long journey ahead, so you've got to have these quick wins happening all the time, and all of them to add on top of the next one as well. So they're not like satellite things happening in different corners of the business. They need to start to come together. And that's where these teams are starting to build from as well. It's great strategy are kicking off something over here, or the kids wear team is starting something there because people are passionate about it and they want to do something. But it does need that overall holistic strategy in the middle, so that, you know, when some of these bigger things need that bigger investment, it's all aligned up together. So there's a couple different ways of doing it there, but yeah, overall, I help brands to bring those different ideas together and create that roadmap.
So then what do you think is going to be, or what are the next sustainable innovations that are really going to come to the forefront in the next few years that A, really excite you, or they're really going to impact the industry somehow?
So from the innovation side of things, I think the fiber to fiber recycling is just on a rocket ship just now. It's growing so, so fast. And it's getting really good investment. It's getting good partnerships from brands and private equity as well. So I think that's really solid. And the governments in those countries are generally supporting it. You know, certain industries are closing down, whether it be paper mills and things like this. And these new fiber-to-fiber recycling mills are needing to now be at a serious industrial scale. So they're able to take on those people that are maybe made redundant. So I see that area growing rapidly at the moment, and I hope that continues. I know Zara have just made a new partnership with one of them as well. So that needs to continue. I hope, though, as well, that the fiber-to-fiber recycled, or the recycled fiber-to-fibers that come off these, whether it be Infinited Fiber or Renewal Cell or this, you know, there's 20 others all growing just now rapidly. I just want to make sure that the younger brands who have the values around sustainability can still access those fibers as well, and the big brands don't get exclusivity of them. So that would be my one sort of like balancing point there. So that's exciting that when these products are at the very end of their life, there could be a solution for them now, or there is a solution for them now. But I don't want to overly focus on recycling solutions. We need to focus on how do we get products made, made to order. So there's a lot of jeans brands that are pivoting more to that model, slowing down fashion so that what we buy is stuff we really, really love. So that's really exciting. I want to see that more, that people just know that here, my running shoes are going to run out, or my jeans are, you know, threadbare. I'm okay waiting 8 weeks in order to get them. So the way we do that is going to be through, again, more customer behavior and change and awareness. And it's not necessarily innovation. I just think people like Netflix are doing an incredible job to make sustainability, people's consciousness, accessible to more people, whether it be through Coldplay, Zac Efron, like whoever it is, whoever you're inspired by. Billie Eilish is doing like amazing stuff. Like whoever you're inspired by out with the fashion industry, a lot of those heroes and heroines are like talking about this passionately because they're vegan for a reason. And when they do that on this global stage, then people are like, okay, if it's important to them, it's important to me. And maybe I'm going to try the vegan burger, whatever else. Okay, maybe I'm going to slow down my fashion because it's important to them as well. So traditional innovation, I think there's a lot of just consumer mindset change. And that can come from different angles beyond the fashion space as well. And then again, going back to people like Lone Hoods, that peer-to-peer rental model, really, really exciting. And the speed that that's growing as well, I can only support that more and more over the next, you know, weeks, months, as people start to change their consumption behaviour.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Connor, sharing your insights with myself and Bon.
Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it and look forward to catching up again soon.
Thank you for listening. We will be releasing episodes at least once a month, with each episode featuring a different topic. We'll also have guests joining us, such as founders from our portfolio of startups and fashion industry insiders from our incredible network, to bring further discussions on sustainability, fresh perspectives on design, and many more all related to fashion tech. Be sure to check us out on social media at beyondform_io, as well as our website beyondform.io for updates. Beyond Form brings human and financial resources together to launch and scale early stage fashion tech startups with ambitious founders. We hope to potentially see some of you joining our venture studio very soon. Don't forget to drop us a line if you'd like to hear us talk about a specific topic. Until next time.